with even more sickening diatribes against myself, against my daughter, against Laura. Lots of bad comments about Jason as well, trolls. I just don't need it. And until the system is a workable, manageable system where comments are tied to accounts and you can blacklist accounts and accounts that are threatening you or leaving illegal comments or comments that are threatening violence, threatening terrorism, threatening other such things, until those can be dealt with properly, comments will be off on there. So that is my statement on BitChute. Now, I suggest people go over to Odyssey. The comments on Odyssey are a lot more positive. They are a lot more white pilling. When you put up a good video on Odyssey, people have nice things to say about it, and that is a good thing. And to be honest, if people have bad things to say about it and want to debate content I've produced, that is fine. But threats to my family, threats to my colleagues, I am not going to tolerate those kind of comments, nor am I going to tolerate sickening comments suggesting that members of my family or my colleagues should die or be raped. It's not on. So unfortunately, those comment sections are closed. My videos will still be uploaded to BitChute on a regular basis, but more content will be exclusive to Odyssey and commenting will be exclusive to Odyssey. So please catch me up on there. Now, I know that was a bit of a lengthy intro. Some people get annoyed about the intros being long, but I did have to tell you about this because it's something that has really been bugging me for the last few months, to be honest. The comment sections there have just got unmanageable. Anyway, if you'd like to contribute to this show or ask questions, you can contribute via Entropy. The Entropy link will be sporadically placed in the Odyssey and the DLive chat throughout the evening by Jason, by Laura, and by myself. So please pop on over to Entropy. You can send paid super chats. All paid super chats are gratefully received, and paid super chats go towards helping me work full-time for Nationalism and for Patriotic Alternatives, so they're very important. And you can also ask non-paid questions, and the highest rated non-paid questions get asked every week if we have time to fit them in. Now, you can also send me emails at mark@fallofwesternman.com if you need any help, if you need advice, if you need to ask questions, or if you want to donate via crypto. Please check out my crypto links. They're on my Gab, they are on my Odyssey, and they are on my Telegram. And if you want to donate via bank transfer or by a crypto that you don't see listed, please email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, we have a number of other shows coming up this week. We have the Warzone tournament on Sunday night, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., an hour earlier, because we have an agreement with Greg Johnson. We're not streaming over each other anymore. We're going an hour earlier. He's going an hour later. That will be for 2 hours on Odyssey, and we'll be joined by Ethan Ralph and hopefully Andy Worski, as well as the Patriarch. We also have I have a video out on Friday about the recent drone strike in Afghanistan. It's called Why Afghans Have the Right to Hate the West. That's a very important video about who is to blame for these horrible foreign occupations and invasions. So please do check that out. Now, without further ado, I'm going to throw this over to Jason. Hello, my friend. Who is on tap?
Tap is Thursday, good brother, at 6 p.m. Eastern time. We hope everybody will make it over there because we're going to have the one and only, the great Semiagogue, with the great Mr. George and myself. Very happy to be here with Sven today, and a happy Labor Day coming up on Monday for all of those who will be celebrating, and I pass it back.
Excellent. Well, that was a very quick intro. So I am now going to throw it over to our great friend, Sven Longshanks. Sven Longshanks is a tireless worker for the nationalist cause. Sven dedicates his entire life to running RadioAlbion.com, and that is no small undertaking. RadioAlbion.com provides the best in daily nationalist podcasts, restreams, and other shows, and has a sizable archive of timeless material. Sven also does a fantastic show about Christianity and history with our good friend, the Patriarch. And recently, as you may have read, Sven was in court, and we're going to discuss that tonight because there's been some rumors floating around about that, unfortunately, and we're going to get to the bottom of all that on the show. Sven's going to talk about that. So I'm not going to ramble on any longer. Sven is a fantastic guy. He deserves your support. Radio Albion deserves your support. So Sven, how are you doing tonight, my friend? Please give yourself an introduction. Tell us where we can find you and tell us a bit about RadioAlbion.com, and then we'll talk about your unfortunate legal predicament.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me on once again, Mark. Let me just check. Am I coming through okay? All sounding
good?
You
are coming through loud and clear.
Fantastic. Fantastic. RadioAlbion.com has been going for 7 years now. It's evolved over time. It really just started out with just talking about what was going on in the news. And we now have specialist podcasts looking at history, looking at religion. We have a music podcast. We have an evangelical podcast from America, specific podcast looking at Russian history, all sorts of stuff that's of interest to ethnocentrically minded folk. And you can find all of that at radioalbion.com. And we've had a little bit of trouble recently. Only it wasn't really that recent that it started. It actually started two years ago. Basically, we started appearing in the newspapers with some nasty smears against us. And in December 2018, the BBC put out a programme exposing Radio Aryan, as it was called back then. And they were both basically saying that we were supporting a group called the System Resistance Network, which we were not doing. I had a co-host on at the time, Alex Davies, and National Action had all just been put to bed and it was all finished. And I thought I would help Alex out by having him on as a co-host to show that he was doing nothing to do with National Action anymore, because National Action didn't do podcasts. So Alex was my co-host. We did a show. And this group, System Resistance Network, they had put out some propaganda. And in the show, Alex said, this propaganda here that they're putting out, this is borderline illegal. They possibly shouldn't be putting this propaganda out. That was all we said. And the next week, this System Resistance Network vandalized some disabled toilets. And we were very suspicious. We said, well, this is not on. This looks like it's a setup. We think this is maybe a state setup. And the BBC reported that as us supporting this group, System Resistance Network, and they called for this group, System Resistance Network, to be shut down. And then what happened was they made this half-hour TV programme, and they got in touch with an MP, and the Member of Parliament said that he wanted Radio Aryan to be investigated, and the Assistant Chief Constable they had on, he said, we will investigate this, and if an offence is there, we will bring people to justice. So this was back in December 2018. So we were aware that Radio Aryan, as it was then, was going to be investigated. And we've always been careful to make sure that we stay within the law. We know what the law is. The law tells us that we're not allowed to have an intent to incite hate. And further to that, that we're not allowed to do something that may stir up hate. So we've always been very careful not to do either of these two things. And in June 2019, the police downloaded some podcasts from our website, 15 or 16 podcasts, and they obviously went through these podcasts without us knowing, but we were aware that the site was being investigated, as I say, because the BBC told us that, even though their report was shown to be completely wrong and we weren't supporting System Resistance Network at all. Then in December 2019, it was just after we had changed the name of the website from Radio Aryan to Radio Albion, just after we'd had our fantastic Patriotic Alternative Conference, the first conference. It was a few weeks after that, and suddenly my door got kicked in at 7 o'clock in the morning, and there were, I think, 12, 15 police officers there. Thankfully, they didn't have guns. They were polite. But I was like, well, what is going on here? And they said, are you Sven Longshanks? And I was like, well, yes, I'm not hiding that. I've never tried to hide that from the police. I just use a different name because I don't want journalists to know who I am. I mean, most people that are involved in the media don't use their real names. They use an assumed name. So I've always done that. And they said, well, we need you to answer some questions. And I said, well, you could have just knocked at the door and I would have been quite happy to answer whatever questions you have. You know, we're not doing anything illegal. We're not against the police. And they said, well, you have to come down to the station anyway. So they took me to a police station miles away, about 2 or 3 hours drive, actually, from where I live. And luckily, I had a phone number and a reference number for a solicitor that deals with free speech issues. So first off, I gave them that. And I was sort of concerned about what would be going on back at my house after they'd bashed the door down. I mean, this is the first time anybody's house had been broken into, I think, ever in the place where I live. So they said that they wanted to interview me after being in the police station about 4 or 5 hours. They said, we're ready to interview you now. We've been going through the through your belongings at home." And they had actually taken, I think, about 100 different bits and pieces. They took all my devices. They took books. They even took rags out of the car. Really bizarre things that they took, ornaments. They took the, I think it was either the speakers or the stands for the conference, really bizarre stuff, analog microphones that can't be used on a laptop, and their search warrant said that they were looking for radio recording equipment. And of course I do all of this on a laptop and a microphone and headphones, so it's not as if there's lots of expensive equipment. They said they wanted to interview me, and I thought, well, you've got all my archive up there. There's, you know, there's thousands of hours of me talking. I'm quite prepared to justify anything that you want to put to me. So, yeah, I'll go along. I'll do the interview if you want. Just let me speak to a solicitor first. So I spoke to a solicitor. It was a duty solicitor that was actually found for me by my chosen solicitor. And he showed me the questions that the police wanted to ask me. And I looked through them and I thought, well, yeah, I can answer all of these. I can justify all of these. And I went through it with the duty solicitor, and he said, yeah, you can definitely answer all of these. I don't think they're going to be able to trick you or whatever. And I thought, well, I want to get on the good side of them. I don't want to be on the bad side of them. If I just don't answer them, they're free to misinterpret anything that I've said in whatever way they want to. At least this way, I will be able to nip it in the bud if they do try to misinterpret any of my comments. So I thought, well, I'll give them the interview, and they were very polite, but they weren't very well informed. One of the things they said to me, they suggested that I had invented the word octoroon and was using it as a racial slur. And of course, octoroon is not a racial slur. It's a precise definition of a particular type of mixture. You have mulatto, quadroon, octoroon. I think they were even used in American civil law some years ago. So that was one point that they didn't get. They didn't understand. Another point was that they thought that Henry Ford hadn't actually written the Dearborn Independent. There were quite a few ways that I was pointing out, well, your researchers have got this wrong. Your researchers really are not... they do not understand the subject matter that they're actually talking to you about. And that happened quite a few times. And at the end of the interview, they said, well, you've given a very good account of yourself. And in actual fact, if what you have said checks out, then you have no charges to answer for, basically. So I went back home and I thought, well, what they have to do now is they have to go through all the stuff, my stuff that they took. They won't find any evidence of racial slurs. They won't find any evidence of me supporting violence. Hopefully they'll give me my stuff back. What do I do now? And I thought, well, the best thing to do is really to keep quiet about it. If I talk about it, then the journalists will know about it. They'll be wanting to try and find out what my real name is and where I live and all the rest of it. And they would have been able to do all that 2 years ago if I had spoken about it. And I had to weigh that up against, well, now I also need to replace all my equipment that they've taken. And I'm obviously going to need some funds to do that. And in the end, I thought, well, it's best if I just replace everything and keep quiet about it and wait to see what happens. So the first person that I got in touch with was, of course, your good self, Mark, because I knew that you would be able to help me out with a computer straight away and a new microphone. And thanks to you, we only had about 24 hours downtime of the radio. And then the radio was back up and we just continued from there. Basically, up until today. And I don't know if you want to make any comments on that up to that point, Mark, or do you want me to continue?
No, I just wanted to make the point that a few people who are extremely disingenuous and are using this for some kind of political point scoring have tried to make out that your arrest was something to do with Patriotic Alternative, that it was a decision made due to your involvement in Patriotic Alternative, that somehow the charges against you have something to do with PA. And I think the important thing for me at the beginning of all of this is to make it very clear that all of this investigation predates the existence of PA by months or years. It's got nothing to do with PA. And the people saying that, they know that because they know how long these criminal investigations take. They know that PA hasn't really been around long enough for you to have been arrested and been on police bail for that amount of time. This has been going on for a long time, as these cases tend to do. So this has got nothing whatsoever to do with PA. It's to do with what was then called Radio Aryan. And when Sven was arrested, I've got to say, I was appalled, not just by the fact that he was arrested, but by the level of force used by the police. Now, this is a guy who's been accused of saying something that might have offended someone. I'm not actually sure if anyone's even come forward and said that they were offended or if somebody has been offended on behalf of someone else. But to use that many police officers and to burst through someone's door, use that much force for something that amounts to at most hurt feelings or perceived hurt feelings is absolutely insane. But sadly, it is indicative of the kind of state that we live in today in Britain. It's indicative of what we live under, the tyranny we live under. I don't know if Jason's got any takes on this as well before Sven continues. From what you've heard so far, Jason, what
do you make it? Well, I just want to say, as a character witness, if you will, and having spent a weekend with Sven, of course somebody can be a wonderful actor, but I doubt he's been to acting school, and I doubt he was trying to just perform to be some sort of innocent, almost I hope Sven doesn't take this offensively, but almost a sweet guy. For them to do this, this is a legal theater. I feel my heart goes out to you, brother, to be awakened in the middle of the night or at any time of day by police officers, 15 or whatever it is, storming into your house, whether they're carrying firearms or not. They bring with them the badge and the law, the authority of the state. And ultimately, this is the kind of thing that we have seen for a very long time, even before they had laws to be able to prosecute people for things like thinking something that is not anti-white enough. They engaged in this legal theater. I'm sure, Mark, you remember, they would for a long time, especially in the U.S., the police would show up and they would say, well, we're investigating this leafleting. The leafleting is legal, the speech was legal and everything, but the police are still going to go and collect everybody's names. They're still going to go collect everything. So there was just like this legal theater, which was meant to terrorize. That's exactly what it is. What is the difference, I ask the audience, what is the difference between terrorism that comes to us in the form of balaclava wearing anti-whites in the streets or uniform wearing of the police department? There is no difference. It's still terrorism. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. Not only are they trying to terrorize Sven out of advocacy for white well-being, but they're also trying to terrorize everyone who will find out about this story. And it's one of the reasons why so often Mr. George and I, we almost never talk about the things that the anti-whites are trying to do to us, because there is this psychological effort that is called fear of the mad dog. And that is that if somebody is going to step up, they're going to stick their head above the parapet. The anti-whites are going to make an example out of them to make sure everybody else stays down. But Sven, my heart goes out to you, brother, and please continue with your story.
Well, you're right. It was actually the anti-terrorist police, believe it or not, just for, you know, things that have been said in a podcast. And they did actually mention the conference. They said, we know about your conference. We're not interested in the conference. We're just interested in, these particular podcasts. And we're not saying to you, you need to shut the radio station down. But we need to check that you are not inciting hate with some of the things that you've been saying in your podcast. And that was basically the drift of it. So I hoped that I was going to get my stuff back and they would look through my private messages, see that I'm not inciting hate, see that I'm not supporting violence anywhere, and just give me my stuff back. And then about a month ago, I had another knock at the door and some local police there. And they said, oh, do you remember when you were arrested back in 2019? And I was like, well, yes, of course. That's, the only time I recall being arrested. So, they said, well, we're going to be charging you and we need to read these charges out. So they read the charges out and the charges were of stirring up hate or intent to incite hate or likely to stir up hate. And there's basically 15 or 16 of these charges. So they read them out to me and said, what is your comment? And I said, there has never, ever been any intent to incite hate. And I'm not guilty of the charges. And I will be fighting these charges in court. And it sort of dawned on me then that all the interview where I was answering all those questions, that was really them just trying to catch me out. They weren't able to catch me out. They haven't actually heard my defence. They haven't actually thought about my defence. I don't even get the chance to put my defence until this goes to trial. And when I do get a chance to put my defence there, I believe I can contextualise all of it, and I will be found to be not guilty. And they really need to recalibrate their procedures for actually defining what it is that is likely to incite hate, or what it is that is likely to incite terrorism. I mean, I believe if you look at the Radio Albion website, when it started out, it may have been a bit rough around the edges, but it's become really professionalized, and there is no way that you could say that any of what we do has an intent to incite hate. I mean, we understand that you should not speak with hostility about other minorities. We're continually trying to see things from their point of view. Yes, we do talk about racial differences, but not in a way that we're trying to judge people for being different. We say, well, no, they're different. You know, they can't change the way they are. We can't, lay the blame for certain things at their feet because we invited them into our country. I mean, there are so many things that we talk about, and none of it comes from a position of hate. It all comes from a position of love for our people and trying to inspire our people to go out there and set a good example. And I haven't had a chance to actually put this across yet, and I will be putting this across, and I have lots of evidence and facts and statistics to back me up. I have thousands of hours worth of podcasts which are all saying the same thing, because what they've done is they've basically taken podcasts out of context. They've taken them out of the context that they were in, which was 2017, 2018, when Twitter, Facebook and YouTube were full of racial slurs. So they've taken them out of that context. They've taken them out of the context of the podcasts that were playing around them, and they've taken the quotes out of context of the podcast that they're in. And that's fair enough. They're trying to see whether I'm a hater or not. So they're going to pick out the worst bits they can, and they're going to say to me, can you justify this? Can you contextualize this? Which is what I did in the interview when I was arrested. And that's basically what's going to happen in the court. It's going to be a very important trial, because it could very well set a precedent for free speech.
No, I was just going to say, Sven, that's exactly right. It's going to be an important trial, and I'm concerned that they didn't care about what your defense would be. Did I understand that right? Is that what you're saying, that they said, here are your charges, and they couldn't care less what your defense was going to be?
No, I think they heard what I said in the police station, and they said I gave a good account of myself. So the way that I accounted for myself in the police station, that would have been good enough if what they'd been putting in the police station was the charges. That wasn't. The charges were relating to another set of podcasts, and that's what will be going on in the court, and then I will have to defend myself against that, basically. So I get my chance to defend myself in the court, in the trial. Basically, it's like an inquisition of me to see whether I'm trying to incite hate or whether it's academic interest, freedom of speech and journalism, which is what the interest in the case is about. If you look at the news reports, apart from all the smears and the slanders and all the nasty names they've called me, the one true piece in those reports is, what is the interest in the case? It's journalism, free speech and academic interest, because that's what we deal with on the website. So basically, I have to contextualize the things that I've said, and show that is what we're doing at the website, which is, you know, it's very obvious, I think, to people that look, that is what it is. And you were pointing out, has anybody said that they were offended? Well, no. The only people that have ever complained about Radio Albion or Radio Aryan have been the BBC and a Daily Mail journalist. There's nobody else has ever actually complained about it. It's just been left-wing journalists. They're the ones that have said this.
Sven, is this normal for prosecutors in the UK to be not interested whatsoever in what the defense is going to present? Because I'm only asking because in the US, that would imply that they know that they've got a sure thing, that there's nothing that the defendant could say that is going to be able to get them out of the charges.
Well, I think it's because this is it's a public order offense. It's a free speech offense. So they're basically going to throw everything they can at me, and I've got to defend myself from it. I mean, and they want to do it in the court, and also because they want to make a public spectacle of it as well. They want to try and intimidate people into not talking about these subjects. You know, that plays into this as well. And the journalism side of it, like they wanted to have all the journalists there to film me when I was there at court. That side plays into it as well. But I hadn't actually seen the charges that were going to be put to me, the specific points of the charges that were going to be put to me, until a month ago when I was given them. You see, when I was arrested and I did the interview with them, they were asking me about different things. See, what they were planning on doing is they had the original set of charges and points they were going to put in court. And then they arrested me. And during the arrest, they asked me another set of questions. And what they were hoping is I wouldn't have been able to answer those questions. And then they would have added those to the other ones. And, you know, they would have been able to get me like that, double got me when it came to the court. But as it was, I was able to answer all the questions that they put to me during the arrest. And I hadn't actually seen these other ones that have been put to me now. But I can see from the time that they were downloaded and the work that was done on them, it was actually all done 6 months before I was arrested. So this is the way that they're doing it. You know, they're sort of trying to make it double certain that they get a definite guilty, because, you know, when they take somebody to court, they don't want them to be found innocent. They want them to be found guilty, so they're going to do everything they can to do that. So that's basically what's gone on. So I've only just now seen all these various points that are going to be put to me at the trial from the prosecution. And I'm working on the moment.
This is completely, Sven, this is completely unfair. I mean, Mark knows much more, obviously, and I'm sure you do too as well, about the legal system in the UK. But this is ridiculous. You're brought down to the police station for a set of potential charges. You talk about those with them, and then they say, right, no problem there. And then you get charged with different things later. And then the prosecution isn't even interested in what you will present as your defense. I know there have got to be more similarities. In the U.S., though, prosecutors, they want to know what you have to share. You can't present something in trial at the U.S. that is not anticipated or expected by the other side. So I'm really concerned, unless I'm my ignorance of the law and how it operates in the U.K., it could be the result of my concern, but I'm concerned that these anti-terrorism, and is that what this is under, some anti-terrorism charges or something like this? And by the way, just for everybody who is in the U.S., maybe other Western countries, I'll just say this and toss it over to Sven. But if the FBI or Homeland Security or the police department or the sheriffs or state police or whatever come to your house and they want to talk to you, you do not say a thing to these people. They might be wonderful people. You say this and put a big smile on your face and you say, it would be delightful to speak with you through my attorney. May I have your card? I will happily speak with you through my attorney. May I have your card? And let them just say again and again, but we just have a couple questions, because in the U.S., my friends, they will just flat out lie about you when you get into court. They will just say, Sven had a much more pleasant scenario where he was able to speak to some of their concerns. And they said, okay, well, we don't have those concerns anymore. Not in the U.S. You say anything, and then you will find yourself standing across from a uniformed individual with a lot of authority saying that you said the exact opposite and that you fidgeted weird and your eyes darted from side to side in the U.S. through nothing but the attorney. But brother, please, is this, I guess, normal for a prosecutor to be uninterested in your defense? And is it also normal to be charged with something after you've been taken down to the station on questions about something else? And then Mark has probably heard, you know, 24 people going through the same process.
Well, yeah, let me just point out here. I mean, what they did is they charged me with this intent to incite hate or likely to stir up hate. And then they put to me these various points in the interview at the station. And I was able to answer all of these points. And now that the charges have come through, it's a separate set of points that they want to put to me that I hadn't seen before, but it's quite obvious from the dates that these podcasts were all downloaded. It was all done 6 months before I was arrested, and that first lot of points were put to me. And they refer to the questioning that I went through, and you can see from that and that they weren't able to actually use any of that against me. So it looks to me like they've done that. And maybe the police, because it does sound like it's actually gone to the CPS and then it's gone back to the police again. So it may well be that the police have said, well, we think he can actually answer this and he can contextualise it. And the CPS may have said, well, we're not having that. We've got too much pressure. You know, this guy needs to answer for this in court. Go back and do it all again. So, I mean, that may have been what happened. I don't know. But I do know that now I actually have these points here that they are going to put to me, and I can defend myself against all of them. I can contextualise all of them. Because, as I say, what I've done has never come from a position of hate. And the more that I've refined what I'm doing, and the other hosts here at Radio Albion, the more sympathetic we've become to other minorities. You know, it's never come from a position of hate, and we've become more and more careful in the way that we speak so that nobody could even accuse us of that. So, I mean, we know that people don't get stirred up to hate, but that's what it says in the law. So we have to stick with that, and we do stick to that. So I'm confident that I will be defeating these charges. I'm very confident that I'll be defeating these charges because I can answer everything that they've put to me, and they couldn't catch me out on my answering with the arrest, and they weren't able to find anything in my private messages either that showed that I supported violence or incitement or anything like that. And it is important that this goes to court because, as I say, they need to recalibrate their processes for doing this, because we have children that are in prison on terrorism charges. We have people on the autistic spectrum that are in prison on terrorism charges. And their reasoning for that is because these people used racial slurs or said something daft, their logic is, well, that's going to get worse and worse and worse until they go out and kill somebody. And that's their logic. And what I'm saying is, no, the logic isn't that they're going to get worse and worse and worse. They're far more likely to become far more refined and far more sympathetic. And if you look at Radio Albion, you can see that's the course that the radio station has taken. And that wasn't because we were arrested. It's just because as you find out more about the situation that we're in and you understand more about it, then you come at it from a more objective point of view. And that is something that we're very good at doing as white people, is seeing things objectively. That's why we were always known as, you know, the best people to go to for justice in the world and law and order, because we saw things from other people's point of view. And the more you study the sort of sensitive subjects that we do, the more you see things from other people's point of view. And you can see that these, you know, these other minorities, they're just doing what is best for them. The fault in all of this lies in white people and the way that we have turned our back on our traditions, everything that we were told in the past. We've turned our back on our religion, we've turned our back on our morals, and this is our payback. And we have to do what we can to wake our people up, and we have to do it within this framework. And a lot of us will say, well, this framework is really oppressive and it's terrible and all the rest of it, but it's still the framework that we built for ourselves. You know, it's no good blaming other people for the situation that we're in. Our competitors want us to blame them for the situation that we're in, because then when we do that, they can say, well, we're inciting hate against them, or we're being anti-Semites, or what have you. And then they can use our own legal system to crush us. So it's not in our benefit to look at things in that way, and it's not the white man's way to look at things like that either, to blame other people. You know, you have to take responsibility for the situation that we're in, and then you have to understand that it's your duty to do something about it. And you know, this is really the best thing that could happen, is this could be decided in a trial in a courtroom, and we can set a precedent. I think we can set a precedent here for free speech, and we can get them to recalibrate their thinking and stop going after children for saying silly things and saying that what they're saying is going to lead to people murdering people, because it's not. You know, we try to to turn people away from thinking like that and get them into helping their community and doing positive things, feeling like they have a stake in society, encouraging love for their countryside, encouraging love for their people. A patriotic alternative is a fantastic, you know, proof of that. And that's what patriotic alternative is doing. It's exactly what, you know, I'd always wanted to see happen in Britain since starting doing the podcasting. And, you know, and that is like the proof of the positive things that come out of this. All the musicians, all the artists, all the people making music, these are all positive things. They're not things you do when you're all tied up with hate and you're hating people and you're blaming people. It's all things that you do when you want to do what you can for your people and you want to help people and you want to set a good example. And that's what Radio Albion is about. And that's what I will show in that courtroom. And it will be seen to be what it is, which is, you know, well, it looks to me like a malicious prosecution. I think when you look at the way that the website is, and you look at what's going on around us and the solutions that we present, because we present solutions to everything, and every single one of them is an objective solution. It looks at it from the point of view of other people as well. I mean, that's why PA suggests with voluntary repatriation, people get a reward for going back to their country. So it benefits them, it benefits us. And that's the way that we look at things. So that is basically what has been going on. It's nothing to do with Patriotic Alternative. Mark has been absolutely brilliant. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have been able to get the radio back on again within 24 hours. I'm confident that we're going to beat this. I have a good solicitor, and that's all there is to it, really. And I really do want people to write to me and tell me why they listen to Radio Albion, what it does for them, whether they've been encouraged to do anything, whatever it was that they've been encouraged to do, have they been encouraged to get active? And just write that to me, because I can use that, because they're all witness statements from our listeners, because apparently, you know, I'm inciting hate among our listeners. So let's ask them exactly why they listen to Radio Albion, and then I'll be using those in court as well as witness statements. So please write to me at stormersubs@hushmail.com, or message me in Telegram, or message me on Gab, or on Discus. There's all sorts of ways that you can get in touch with me. So just, I want to know why people listen to Radio Albion, what it does for them, and whether they've been inspired to do anything by our content. And that will be the big help. That's the best help that people can do for me. And I've had loads so far, and they're absolutely wonderful. I mean, they really do encourage me, as well as being useful for me in the defence. And it's going to be a really massive defence that I'm mounting against this. It's going to be a really impressive trial when it actually starts.
Well, I've been involved in a trial like this before, and for me, the worrying part of what's actually gone on with all of this is that they've charged you with two things, a higher count and a lower count. One is using words and language intended to stir up racial hatred. And the lesser charge is using words and language likely to stir up racial hatred. And I find the second part of that the worrying part. So you can actually stand up in court and you can effectively prove beyond all reasonable doubt that you did not intend to stir up racial hatred, that you are not motivated by racial hatred, that you said everything with a political motivation. You said everything to bring about peaceful, democratic political change. You talked about scientific terms. You used facts and figures. You even put disclaimers before your shows to say, if you are easily offended, please do not listen to this. You could have done anything in your power, or everything in your power, to ensure that you are seen to be a good person, because you are not intending to stir up racial hatred. And you can be found not guilty. You can be acquitted of all of those charges. But then, and this is the problem, you must then face the lesser charges, which is using words or language likely to stir up racial hatred. And I've been involved in a trial where I was charged with the greater and the lesser offence, and I got found unanimously not guilty on all eight charges. But the real nerve-wracking bit is the lesser charge, because they have to then decide whether you were inadvertently stirring up some kind of racial hatred. And that is something that's very hard to defend against. And I find that particular charge very, very Orwellian indeed. I don't know if you'd like to comment on that, Sven, before we talk about a few other things. But I think what we need to do here is people need to come forward as character witnesses for Sven. People need to talk about how they've been inspired by him. People need to talk about how they have been moved to genuine political action by him and the positive impact he has on so many people's lives. Because I think this is a very, very important trial that could well set the stage for future trials. If there was a massive miscarriage of justice and Sven was found guilty on some of these charges, that could open the floodgates. Whereas if Sven was to be found not guilty, if he was to be acquitted, that would strengthen the case for so many others. So this is very important. But if you'd like to briefly comment on the lesser and greater charges that I've just explained to the audience, that would be greatly appreciated. And how you feel about those?
Well, that's why I've been asking people to write in and say, you know, why they listen to Radio Alban, how they feel when they listen to it, if they've been inspired to do anything, because this shows that instead of likely to, this is actually what happened. These are real people. This is why they listen to Radio Albion. This is what they've been inspired to do. That's why I want these statements, and that's why I want people to write in. It's for that secondary charge, to show that what I do is not likely to incite people to hate. It's far more likely to encourage a sense of understanding in people, and an understanding of the differences between the races, and an understanding of why things are the way they are, and an understanding of the sort of things that they can, the sort of changes that they can make in their own individual lives so that they can have a positive influence on the people around them. I mean, that's what we're about. And that's why I need people's help. I need people to write in and tell me about this, because then we can get this reset. We can get this so that, you know, they only go after something that really is likely to incite hate. Because these laws, this definition of hate, it was originally supposed to be hatred of sufficient vitriol that it could result in actual violence, actual murder of somebody. And that's how these laws started out. And instead of being language which could incite somebody to actually murder somebody, it's become whittled away now until it's language just using language that was fashionable 10 years ago and isn't fashionable now, or language or words for racial minorities that people might not think are very polite. And there's a big difference between using a word that isn't very polite, that might make some people laugh, might make some other people not laugh, and using the sort of language that could encourage somebody to go out and murder someone. And these laws, they need resetting. You know, the law was probably set off with good intentions. It was of preventing violence, but it's now become changed to such a way that it's being used to restrict free speech. It's being used to restrict academic interest. It's preventing us from being able to talk honestly about our history. You know, we can't even talk honestly about religion in some cases. So it really does need resetting. And you know, that this could be the chance to do that. So yeah, please do write in and tell me why you listen to Radio Albion, and it will be a big help. And all the Radio Albion listeners can help and take part in this. And if we get justice and if everything is fair, and I do believe the British justice system is probably the best justice system in the world. I do have my criticisms of it. If everything is fair and justice is served, then I will be found not guilty of these charges.
Mark, I got a quick question for you.
I was just going to ask one quick thing for Sven before you ask that question. Sven, due to the COVID restrictions, are people allowed to come to court and support you? And if so, would you like people to be there when you're being cross-examined? Would you like some of us to travel over? Would that be possible?
Well, I think that won't actually happen for about another year. They will end up delaying it. I will end up pleading not guilty again at the next hearing, and then they will set a date for the trial, giving us plenty of time to prepare our defence. So the actual trial probably won't take place for another year. And I think there are still COVID restrictions in place at the moment, so people that can actually come into the court are limited. So I'm not really asking for supporters. So I'm not really asking for supporters at the moment, but thanks for asking.
That's maniacal. I mean, they just want to hang this over your head. Nobody, it's difficult to live life as it is, but to live life with this doom hanging over your head at some point in the future, absolutely despicable. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they just put it off for as long as possible so that you know that there's this moment that this has to take place. This is going to be this judgment moment. Despicable. But the question I have for Mark is that on the secondary charges, are you saying that the prosecution need only argue that someone, anyone, could conclude from the remarks that are made something that the government finds objectionable?
No, no. What it is, I'll try and be very clear. The law is written in such a way that the first or greater charge is that you were intending to stir up racial hatred. So the first charge, and it's not intent to cause people to be violent. It's not intent to cause people to go out and commit terrorism. It's intent to make other people hate people on a racial basis. So the first charge is that you have knowingly intended to make people hate other people. The lower charge or the lesser charge is that you were doing what you did with good intention, but it may well have caused people to hate others. That is the point. And I have to differ here with Sven quite a bit, because he said these laws may have been fashioned in a way that was noble. I don't think the UK race laws were fashioned in a noble way. I think they were fashioned to gag people from speaking out against their demographic replacement. We already had very, very robust laws about incitement. And when I say incitement, I mean incitement to commit actual crimes. So, for example, if you called for somebody or a group of people to be physically attacked, if you called for crimes to be committed, if you called for people to attack shops and businesses, you were already dealt with under existing laws. The race laws are far, far more woolly because they aren't actually monitoring you and you speaking out, calling for violence. They're not tangible. So if person X tells a crowd of people to go and kill person Y, that is very, very clear cut. That is very, very tangible, because person X is asking the group of people to commit a criminal act intending to end the life of person Y. That's a clear cut case. You have put somebody in tangible danger. And then the more severe the crime or the severity of the crime is based around whether person X has great standing, whether the crowd he is speaking to is larger, and whether that crowd follows him very closely. So there's multiple intertwining factors that would lead to a more serious conviction if person X was convicted. And obviously, in this scenario, person Y, his life is at risk. He is being threatened with violence that would bring about the end of his life. But with incitement to racial hatred, that is much, much more woolly. Because what you're saying is that person X has given a speech which might make a crowd of people or an individual have a feeling which may result in them liking person Y less, because of person Y's racial characteristic. Now, that is very, very intangible, because you are prosecuting based on the idea that somebody's words weren't going to lead to an action, but were going to lead to a feeling. And to try and answer your question, Jason, that is so woolly that you could say, well, person X spoke to a crowd of 100,000 people on Radio Albion, or this YouTube video was seen by 100,000 people and Sven Longshanks was on there. Well, 99,999 people were not moved in a way that would be described as racially charged. They weren't moved to a point of racial hatred. But one person in that audience left a crazy comment on the YouTube channel, and that one person was seemingly moved to a point of racial hatred by that particular speech. At that point, with a fluffy law, which is very fuzzy around the edges, talking about likelihoods of things being incited, well, if one person could have been seen to have had an emotional change which could amount to hatred, that person, or the person who gave the speech, person X, could be found guilty. And this is madness, but these are the UK's laws, and they're not hard and fast laws. They're not laws such as you are not allowed to use racial slurs. There are certain things which are red zones. One particular red zone is basically tying an ethnic group to a negative stereotype. However, that stereotype may be true. So it's a grey area as to whether it is legal to talk about crime statistics and analyze them along racial lines, because you are then applying what could be seen as a negative stereotype to a racial group. So saying there is a, instead of listing a racial group, I'm going to call people green people because green isn't a racial group, so I can't get into any trouble for that. But say there was a group of people who were green and their race is the green race. Let's say the green race were massively overrepresented when it came to raping women. And you then said, oh, look, I've had a look at crime statistics and green people only make up 10% of the population, but they make up for 50% of the perpetrators of sex crimes against women in Britain. Even if that was statistically true, that could fall foul of the race laws. And one very famous quote by a judge, and I have to dig it out, is that ultimately the truth is not necessarily a defense in a race trial, because you can cite statistics, you can cite facts, you can cite all manner of figures and studies, but if putting those figures and studies in front of a group of people has stirred up the emotion of hatred aimed at a race within those people, you could be seen to be inciting them just by placing figures and facts in front of them, which makes this such a completely insane law. So I'll give you an example of how this could be used against me. I did an analysis of terror attacks recently, and I think I worked out that since the year 2000 on the mainland, 96 or 97% of people who died in terror attacks carried out in mainland Britain since the turn of the millennium were killed by Muslims. Now, that is a fact, but the argument could be made that by presenting that as a fact, I am causing people to hate Muslims. Now, of course, I'm not. There is no intention of that. What I am saying is these people, when they come to this country, we have cultural, moral, and ethnic differences. They cause clashes. We would be better off in different parts of the world. I wish these people no ill. I don't want any harm to come to these people. I'm against foreign wars, foreign interventions. I'm against drone strikes all over the Middle East. I don't want to see these people harmed in any way, but I do want British politicians to stop bringing them here, especially in the large numbers they're arriving. And it's clear what my intention is, but you can see how the law is written in such a fuzzy, fluffy way. It can be applied very, very oddly to actually stifle freedom of speech. Now, when I was on trial, I was found unanimously not guilty on all 8 charges. So that then set a precedent that what was said at private political meetings was legal. And the importance of my case at the time was because they were private political meetings in enclosed spaces, usually in the back rooms of pubs, we were in a position where, had we been found guilty, it would have opened up potential prosecutions of people saying things in their own homes. Now, Sven, his case is slightly different because his case was broadcast on Radio Albion. But Sven, I think I'm correct in saying that anyone who goes to Radio Albion, they are asked first if they want to listen. There are disclaimers on the site, yes?
Yeah, there's lots of disclaimers. It says by continuing to view the site, you are agreeing not to take offence at any. It's not aimed at anybody else. It says that we may use some archaic terms. If we do, they're not used in a pejorative sense. They're just used in a sense of accuracy. And we have an essay up there about anti-Semitism, explaining we're not anti-Semites. We talk about the differences between races. We wish Jews all the very best. We're glad that they've done so well over the last century. What we're concerned about is the fact that white people are not doing so well. We've forgotten our identity. We've forgotten the fact that we're all an extended kinship group. We can look at Jews and we can see the way that they're extremely charitable to one another. They always stand up for one another. They associate with themselves first, that they're a Jew first and foremost. And we've lost that as white people. That's something very admirable that Jews have, that I wish white people would be more concerned about. The way I look at nationalism, it seems like the political expression of Christianity, which is love your neighbour. And your neighbour, it means your racial kinsman. It means your nation. It means love your nation. So nationalism is basically just Christianity to me. And the way that I see it is that as white people, we've forgotten that. We've forgotten that we're all extended relations of one another, and we've forgotten that we should be doing all we can to help one another out and identifying with ourselves like that. And by looking at the way that Jews have had such good successes at doing that, we can see that's what we should be doing ourselves. And also we can look at Jews. They're a tiny little minority, and they've managed to retain their integrity for the last 2,000 years whilst living among a much larger majority, and they've managed to gain their influence and power, even though they're a small minority, and you know, that is a tribute to them. I'm not saying that because I'm trying to get people to hate Jews. I'm just saying that so that people can understand that this is what's going on in our society. All these different groups, all these different racial groups and minorities, they're all competing against one another for influence, and as white people, we're the only group that is not competing. We're the only group that don't have community representatives. You know, anytime anything happens on the television, there's representatives of the Muslim community, representatives of the LGBTQ community, representatives of the black community, no representatives whatsoever of the white community. And when we stand up and say we want to represent our community, we're called white supremacists and we're called racists. And this is the position that we're coming from. It's not that we're encouraging people to hate these other groups. We're trying to get our own group to realize we are a group and to start doing things to improve the outcomes for our group. That's the point of this. It's not about hating others at all. It's about realizing who we are and capitalizing on what we do best, which is being good to each other and good to these other races as well. None of the ideas that we have are thought up in any way to harm other peoples. The whole idea of having ethnostates is because it's of benefit to each group. It is of benefit to each group to live amongst your own people. You'll be producing oxytocin, then you'll be producing the love hormone that gives you a sense of community. You don't have that if you're living in a multicultural center. You've got a different culture to the people that are around you. You're not free to actually live within your own culture. We are always happiest amongst our own people. So it's not about pushing these other peoples away or trying to see them worse off. It's about wanting to see everybody better off, and in particular our own group, our own family. You do naturally want the best for your own family, and you love love your family doesn't mean you hate the other families. And that's the position that that we come from with Radio Albion. And that's the position that I'm going to be arguing for when this goes to trial. But it won't be going to trial yet until we actually get a date, as I say. And that will probably be a year away, which will give us plenty of time to mount, you know, an incredible defence. You know, I've got a really, really good defence all worked out already, but it's going to be massive by the time it actually goes to trial. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Mark.
Well, we will obviously help you preparing your defence, and I will give you numerous verbal sparring sessions as much as you wish, because I've been through this before, so I know how stressful it will be. And the important thing is, when you are being cross-examined, it's kind of like a debate where you can't fire back. And that is quite difficult, because often the people that you are talking to, these prosecutors, they will tie themselves up with numerous nonsense. And when they do that, you can basically see opportunities to shred them, but you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to fire questions back. So I will help you in any way I can, and so will the community, I am sure. And also, if you do need funds for this, I hope you are getting state assistance on this, but if you're not, I am sure that we could do a very generous fundraiser for you too, Sven.
Well, I have got legal aid for this, but the legal aid doesn't actually pay the travel costs for my solicitor. He paid for that out of his pocket to come down to the last hearing. So if people can contribute, that would be gratefully received. But we have got legal aid. I mean, the way that I'm looking at this, really, I mean, it's a challenge, and I do like a good challenge, and I am at my very best when I'm under a bit of pressure as well. So this is just another challenge for me to overcome, basically, and we'll all be the better off once I have finished overcoming it, and I have beaten this, and I do intend to beat it.
Excellent. Well, as I said, if you do need anything like that, we will happily run a fundraiser for you in the future. Now, we have got to the halfway point of the show. If you're watching on Odyssey, and there's 200 people watching on Odyssey, and we only have 42 likes, so throw us a like if you can. And we are going to do the super chats now. I did have a couple of funny things I wanted to talk about tonight. Well, one serious thing and one slightly more amusing. So we might get to that later if we get through all the super chats in time. There was a big story in the press today, which I wanted to cover, about foreign criminals. It was basically a bit of a pop at the Conservative Party, because foreign criminals in the UK have soared to a record, well, nearly 11,000, according to the Daily Mail. And we're going to talk about that a bit later if we've got time, because this is under a Conservative government where the Home Secretary, Preeti Patel, is going on about deportations, about the need for these deportations. Yet there's 11,000 of these foreign criminals who are all eligible to be deported because they've all served over 12 months, all been convicted of a crime where they would have served 12 months in a British jail. So it's insane that they are still on our streets. But let's do these super chats first, and hopefully we will get some time to do that later. So the super chats, for those who've donated, and if you want to donate, there is still time to donate. Please like the Odyssey stream, because if you like the stream on Odyssey, it pushes it up the rankings. And give the streams a share if you wish, because I think it's been a very entertaining show so far. Max Anderson gave £10. Thank you so much. He said, watching on replay later, there are so many great PA-related streams every day of the week. Even two on a Tuesday now. Also, great videos from all the regions all the time, it seems. PA is something special. Well, thank you, Max. It certainly is. This community is absolutely fantastic. It's everything we had hoped to build. And we look after our own, so we'll be looking after Mr. Sven Longshanks. And yes, Jodie K streamed last night. Laura and Sam stream on Monday. Charlie Big Potatoes and Cyborg stream on Tuesday also. Obviously, you have me on a Wednesday. I believe it is Mood of the Nation on Thursday. Then on Friday, we get the Ayatollah with his Friday night dinner. Saturday's a night off, and then Sunday is the community stream. So other than Saturday, every night of the week is a PA night. Michael57DE gave $14. Thank you so much. He said, hail the gods, hail our folk, hail PWR. 14 words. Thank you so much. The lovely Aunt Sally, I have a book for you, Sally. gave £3. Thank you so much. And she said, £3 is not much. I hope you get a wave of them. Well, thank you so much. And remember, Aunt Sally appears at the end of every month on our book review. And Aunt Sally is going to be reviewing, along with me and Laura Towler, The Secret Behind Communism with Dr. David Duke at the end of this month. So you will want to tune into that. And the book will be in the post to her shortly. Trish65535 gave $14. Thank you so much, Trish. She says, thanks for all you do. Well, thank you for your very generous support. JP gave $10. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, much appreciation to Sven Longshanks for making PWR available when other platforms weren't available. As always, love the show. Keep doing good God's work. Thank you so much. And also, I don't know whether you guys have seen. But you can now video stream to Telegram. Oh, Jason was like that. Jason was like one of those meerkats then, who just heard something in the background that had startled him. Meerkat Jason's ears pricked up. Yes, Telegram is allowing live streaming, but I am not sure whether it's just live streaming off your phone, sort of phone in hand, impromptu. I couldn't find a stream ingest for it. Now, obviously, I would very much like to live stream to Telegram too, and we'll see if we can get that working. Somebody told me about it just before the show started tonight, so we might be adding live streaming to Telegram too. The Mad Hatter 14 gave £14. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, hi, Mark, no question, just a donation, 14. Thank you so much. Ian Holloway gave £14. Thank you so much, Ian, for your generous donation. He said, hello to everyone on holiday with my wife at the moment, so I'll be watching the show tomorrow. Just wanted to throw in and say thanks to Sven for his work in the white positive sphere. Thank you so much. Stan One gave £14. I wish Sven all the best. He does great work on behalf of all nationalists. God bless and may the truth prevail. 14. Well, thank you so much. Redline gave $14. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, 14 is reason enough. Thank you. Scaredy Cat gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, hi, Mark. Dismayed to read my favorite commenter, the West is being destroyed. I'm losing interest. No, run for Congress. Non-Christ woman wants to unseat Senator Marco Rubio in USA, Christian country. Thank you so much. And Pleasant Pheasant Plucker gave £3. And he says, Mark, you've always been too soft on the green people. PA needs a leader who is tough on those green bees. Lol. Seriously, though, Sven, what's the email for your recommendations? 14. Sven, how can people reach you and help you out?
If they can send their just to how they feel when they listen to Radio Albion, send that to stormersubs@hushmail.com. Or they can send me a message on Telegram or on Gab or on the Discus comments at the RadioAlbion.com site or in the Radio Albion chat room. So any of those. But if you're wanting to write a longer piece, then send it to stormersubs@hushmail.com. And I want to hear why you listen to Radio Albion, how it makes you feel, particularly if you've been inspired to do anything, if you've been inspired to take any action, what sort of a role it plays in your life, all that sort of thing. And that would be really helpful to me. So thank you very much in advance.
Thank you so much. Well, they were the super chats so far tonight. And as we are going, there wasn't really any questions. So if you want to ask questions, throw them in. Otherwise, we can talk about some of the topics that we had ready to talk about. So I'm going to throw this one in because I think this is a very important topic for two reasons. So I spoke about this earlier. Foreign criminals on our streets soar to a record 11,000, new figures reveal. Figures net show at the end of June, there were 10,882 foreign national offenders who had been released from jail but not deported. All could have been deported as they had prison sentences of at least 12 months. The staggering total was up by nearly 1,500 in a year. The total has rocketed by 176% since 2012, when it was less than 4,000. Now, this is notable for two reasons. Firstly, there are nearly 11,000 foreign nationals who have served over 12 months in British jails for serious offences that could be deported, and they're not being deported. Now, that's a story in itself, but also the story here is a little bit more interesting because we have a Conservative government, with Preeti Patel as Home Secretary, who pledged to get a grip of this kind of thing, who pledged to actually do something in regards to foreign criminals. Yet here we're seeing this massive number of foreign criminals on our streets. And let's just have a look at the comments section. Let's see what the best rated is. The best rated is, our politicians from all parties don't care about the indigenous people. Well, I'm going to give that a green arrow because that's actually a pretty damn good comment. And what's the worst rated? The worst rated is, lost access to some databases which may have helped due to Brexit, which doesn't help. I'm going to give that a down vote. But as you can see there, it is quite clear that the majority of people reading the Daily Mail would agree with PA policy that we need to put the indigenous people first and we need to protect them from these foreign criminals. But what do you think to this, Sven? Do you think this is an important story, bearing in mind the Conservative government came to power on two pledges? The first was to get Brexit done, and the second was to get immigration under control. How does this sit with you?
Well, it's they just keep doing the same thing over and over again, don't they, with the Hong Kongese. They've just opened up to all the Hong Kongese. I think there are hundreds of thousands of them can now come over here. They've got British passports. They've just done the same to Afghanistan. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of interpreters they think that they were actually using over there. They've just opened up to them as well. Every time they've made a promise about immigration, they've failed to keep it. And what is going on here with these foreign criminals that are just being turned out on the streets? Why are they not being deported? They're saying that there were COVID regulations that were getting in the way. They're saying that there were problems with lawyers, human rights lawyers, that get in there and they try and prevent it. So why don't they just offer these people some kind of incentive to voluntarily go themselves? Why don't they offer them incentive, say, look, we'll give you a bit of money if you go back to the home country of your ancestral origin, and then they would go themselves, and the lawyers would miss out on the money, and even if there were COVID regulations, they would still turn up to go. I think that's the way that we could deal with it. I know the PA platform is to encourage people to go with voluntary repatriation anyway, but they could do something similar with these foreign criminals, don't you think?
What's your take on this, Jason?
Well, in the United States, in fact, the anti-whites here have now changed the law so that foreign-born criminals can rape and remain in the United States. So that's just something the anti-whites did here in the United States. I mean, this is only possible because the anti-white intent is to inflict injury on our people and white erase us from our own civilization. Part of that process is bringing in people with different biospirits. Some of those people are going to be wonderful. Some of those people are going to be crazed criminals. They should not be allowed in. And when they are found in our midst, they should be deported immediately. The anti-white position on this in the street from the bovine population, and I mentioned this before, an argument that I had with an anti-white white guy was that he said, well, what's the difference between, you know, a white murderer and a non-white murderer that just came across the border? They're both murderers. And I said, you know, you don't sell your point by telling me that I'm already being harmed by X, and now I'll also be harmed by Y. I mean, that makes things worse, bringing in all these other criminals. But what really disgusted me about this guy was that I said, you know, they're going to rape, they're going to murder someone, and I hope it's not your wife and daughter. And he said, well, what are the odds of that? And that's when I told him what I really thought about him, because it's going to be someone's wife, someone's daughter, that are going to be harmed. And Lord willing, I guess, that if it has to happen, that it will be his, since he supports and votes for this sort of thing. I see this continuing. They're bringing in and claiming that they're vetting these individuals right down the street from me. It looks like FEMA bred with the military, and at the DC Expo Center, and they have filled it to the gills with Afghanis, And by the way, they're also, I'm hearing a word not only from law enforcement about this and criminality already beginning as a consequence, but I'm hearing from medical professionals in our sphere who are saying that they are being told by the government, oh, now you have to look out for all of the signs of these deadly diseases, in some of these diseases incurable, that these people are bringing in. So there's no consideration for us whatsoever. It's not a surprise to me then that these numbers soar in the UK, but it is continues to be despicable. And this is the kind of thing that we really need to be sharing with our families, because this is the kind of thing that's going to end up affecting every single person in our communities.
Yes, it certainly is. Well, we've got a more lighthearted news topic today. Well, it's depressing in some ways, but I wanted to highlight this because this was in the Daily Mail today as well. And I think this is important to talk about because we often talk about the effects of feminism. We talk about the effects of the emasculation of males and the withering masculinity. Once the West was a strong, masculine place where men were men and those men knew who they were and they were looked up to by their families and their communities looked up to them, but not anymore. And this particular story I found a little bit depressing, but I thought I'd share it with you. So what we've got here is woman uses PowerPoint presentation to tell her parents she is a stripper and to teach them about her sex positive, powerful job. Now, this is no joke, but A Portland woman, why do they always come from Portland? Jason, quick answer. What is wrong with Portland?
It's the left coast. That's all you need to know.
It's always Portland. A Portland woman named Lex created a lengthy PowerPoint presentation for her mother and father, during which she revealed she is working in a strip club. She sat her mum and dad down in front of a large screen and then talked them through each slide, each of which included details about her pole dancing job. The strip club worker assured her parents her job is completely safe. Lex's presentation was filmed by her sister Sammy, who uploaded the video to TikTok, where it has quickly gone viral, racking up more than 2.4 million views. Many viewers were full of praise for Lex and her parents, who responded to the news very positively, with her mum saying she's glad her daughter is powerful. Well, what a load of complete and utter nonsense. Now, this is the father. He sat there with his daughter of few morals, explaining to them. There's the mum and the dad. You can see them, and they're sat there. Now, really, if this dad was anything of a man, the PowerPoint display wouldn't have got past the first slide. I think my first action would have been to smash the laptop over my knee and find out where this establishment was and tell them in the firmest manner possible not to admit my daughter again. This is the daughter lecturing her parents. Now, it's bad enough that this lecture happened, but for the parents then to allow it to be shown on TikTok, I mean, this guy, he must have had his balls removed. And this is her sister filming it. Y'all, my sister made a PowerPoint to tell my parents she's a stripper. Yes, anyone who uses the term y'all, you know, sub 100 IQ there. Let's see if we've got, oh, this is the girl lecturing. This is the dad looking disappointed, but he hasn't got any balls, so he's not saying anything. This is the stripper. Not particularly attractive, not the most hideous creature I've ever seen, but not particularly attractive. This is the sister. She makes a powerful case for the burqa, probably the kind of woman that you would pay to keep her clothes on. Pretty hideous there, making a peace sign. She put it up online to cause her father even deeper embarrassment. Are there any comments, though? The Daily Mail, has the Daily Mail disabled comments? Add a comment, not one single comment. I wonder why no comments have been approved on this particular article. But joking aside, I actually find that a pretty sad case. That's a girl who's probably at one point was the apple of her father's eye. She is now dancing naked in some seedy club for other men. And not only is she dancing naked in front of other men. Now, I know kids do things their parents aren't going to approve of. But when I was younger, you knew when you were doing something wrong. And if you were doing something you shouldn't be doing, you would at least have the decency not to brag about it or shout about it or bring shame on your parents for doing it. You know, when kids did things they weren't meant to do, part of doing what you weren't meant to do was keeping it quiet. But this girl is obviously proud of what she's doing. She wants everyone to know. She shared this with her father. And now she's humiliated her parents publicly. And they've taken this. And it boggles my mind how we have got this far. Now, what would you say? 50, 60 years ago, a girl did this. She'd have been thrown out of the house. And if she had been doing something like this, she'd have felt ashamed and would have tried to keep it under wraps. This is complete moral decay. It is absolutely the destruction of the masculine head of the house. But I see something quite sinister here with the Daily Mail pushing this article in the way it has, because the Daily Mail is the angry paper. It's the paper people read because they want to be reassured that somebody in the mainstream media vaguely shares the same opinion they do. They can sound off a little bit in the comment sections, but you can see articles like that becoming the norm in that paper. And over time, their readers will start to see that not as the abhorrent situation it is, but actually as some kind of norm, as some kind of, oh, well, this is what young girls do. Well, they shouldn't. It's the glorification of something absolutely sickening. And I would say I feel sorry for that dad, but he should have been a man at that point. He should have been a man. And to make things worse, to allow it to be filmed and put online for the humiliation of the entire family. How absolutely sickening. This literally is the fall of Western man in a single article. Sven, I don't know if you saw this, but what are your thoughts at that abhorrent article and what that girl put her family through?
I think this is what happens when people don't have boundaries. I think he's obviously been a particularly weak father, and this is the result of his weak fathering. He obviously hasn't instilled any boundaries in his daughter. His daughter wants boundaries, so she continually pushes as much as she can, going to the limits of going out stripping and then rubbing that in her parents' faces. And she's got the cheek to then to think that she's the one that's actually teaching her parents, talking down to them with this PowerPoint presentation. You know, this is the end result of somebody never being disciplined for their entire life and being completely spoiled and just allowed to do whatever they like. I'm quite surprised that it says that is the mother and the father there. I would have thought it was probably a stepfather. You know, normally if you have if you still have both your parents there, you're normally going to be more likely to have had some discipline and boundaries and some good influence during your life, balanced influence, simply because you've got both your parents there. So I would be surprised if that was her actual father. So it's embarrassing for him, but it's the end result of him being a bad father. And also for her, I mean, she's clearly pushing. She wants to be disciplined. That's why she's doing it. She's calling for attention, basically, trying to draw attention to herself and just doing it in the wrong way. I mean, really, she probably wants somebody who's a real man, and she can't find one. So she's just stripping and she's being surrounded by lower class men, and she thinks that she's got some power in doing that. Well, you know, she hasn't really got any power in doing that. It's just men that are being driven by their sex drive, and it's just very, very sleazy. I mean, it's just the epitome of Western civilization, isn't it? I mean, this is the sort of thing that people in Afghanistan look at and say, well, no, we don't want this in our countries. You know, people in Syria see that and they say, we don't want this. This is not good. And yet we're told that this is a good thing. We're all liberal. We're all free. We can do whatever we like. You're just free to become a slave to your passions, basically. It's an embarrassment. Just an embarrassment all round. Did it happen in Britain or was it America? Do you know?
It's in America. It's in Portland. And I was just thinking for Mark.
Well, I want a question before you give me your thoughts, Jason. Portland. To put this woman in line, do you think the mighty Jason could re-educate this girl and get her to go free? How would you even begin?
How would I begin to help her to go free? Well, geez, if I were completely. No, I couldn't. I couldn't touch her. I would hire somebody else to date her, and I'd have them get her horizontal, because as everybody knows, women learn best when they're horizontal. So I'd hire them to get her horizontal and begin that person to teach her how to go free of all this nonsense. It's what an absolute sickness. I was just thinking about this. I think that the West Coast of the United States might be closer to sea level than the East Coast. And so all of our guys in the trades will know when it comes to plumbing that hot's on the left, cold's on the right, and shit runs downhill. And so maybe that's why Portland ends up the way that it is. But something else that's interesting about Portland is that we know that by the attractive level of this young woman, that there is a serious eyesight issue in Portland. Because Lord knows, how could anybody go to, or why would anybody go to a strip club when a woman like this is the one taking off her clothing? Sven's point about the man, the father, potentially being, they're saying the father. I mean, maybe he was married to the mother during this time, but who knows if that's his actual biological daughter. He could just be a cuck. And it is, in either case, I don't know, maybe we can neoterize a word here, the hyenification of mankind, or at least our race. In that kingdom of animal, the female dominates and the male is submissive and will roll onto his back and wimp out to the female. She even has a mock penis. So maybe that is what's happening in that household as well. The female is in charge, and in most cases, not all, certainly, but in most cases, certainly not in our community, but in most cases out in the rest of the world, in the white population, the mother indulges and the children. And maybe that's why, exactly to Sven's point, looking for boundaries that she never had. And now she's just going to give the what for to her parents about why she is going to continue stripping and being so empowered by selling her body.
This is the thing, because she hasn't had boundaries before, and now she's stripping, she's likely to get herself into trouble. She thinks she's all empowered, you know, but she's only got a woman's strength, you know, and people are going to be thinking, you know, you deserve a good spanking, girl. That's what you need, you know. She could get herself into trouble. I really do think that. Sorry.
She needs a good spanking, yeah.
She does. She does. She's never been disciplined. It just seems obvious to me.
I wonder what goes wrong in those relationships. I mean, being a dad myself, you wonder how these fathers went so wrong, how these parents went so wrong. Was it a complete lack, like you say, of discipline in the home? Was it a liberal upbringing where anything goes? Was it a lack of Christianity, a lack of morality? I mean, when I say a lack of Christianity, I know some people in the chat will be upset by that because they're pagans, but Christian moral values were once abundant in the West. And yep, when they were abundant in the West, there was far less of this kind of activity. And I know people will say, well, there's always been sex workers, there's always been prostitution. Prostitution is the oldest trade the world has ever known. It's the oldest profession. Well, it may be, and it may have always taken place. But the difference between then and now is then it was behind closed doors. It had its place, but its place wasn't front and center. It was understood by everyone who was involved, the prostitutes themselves, the people who used them, and the people who abstained and never used them or never had anything to do with it. It was understood by all parties that it was seedy. It was unacceptable, and it had to be done away from society. And that's an astounding thing to say, because everyone knew that it was bad, even the people doing it. And that's why it was kept away from the masses, as it was seen as immoral, as I said, even by the people who did it. But now you have these practices being pushed, discussed around the family dinner table, discussed as if they were norms. Parents sat there nodding away as their daughter admits to it, then posting it up so it can go viral, so that everyone can understand how progressive that family is. And it reminds me of a quote, and the quote is by an American, and he said something along the lines of, "It isn't the degeneracy and madness that is horrifying about our times, but it is the fact that the degeneracy and the madness is placed on a pedestal and worshipped as if it were a virtue that is truly horrifying." And this is a perfect example of that. It is something that in itself, even if it were kept secret, would be bad, would be something that would cause the father shame, something that would upset the mother. But it's the fact that it's not being kept secret, that it's front and center, and it's being celebrated, and this girl is being put on a pedestal as if she is a hero for dancing naked in some seedy club, that makes this story even more horrifying. And then for her father, of all people, to be cheering this on, it's just so creepy. It is so creepy. Do I have anything to add to this? Because we've got a few more super chats. And remember,
guys,
it's time for super chat if you haven't yet. Carry on, Jason.
Just wanted to toss in there that the anti-whites in the media are the ones who are celebrating this. And that's why more people of lower than average IQ will want to behave in the way that they get rewarded, that they get celebrated by the media. They get to be on in the newspaper. They get to be on the internet. They get to be on the television. And rest assured that if she does end up getting brutalized by some psychopath who frequences strip clubs, they're going to blame white men for it. And she'll blame white men for it. She'll hate her father even more than she does. Guaranteed, they already have a lousy relationship, her and her. They are placed there by other anti-whites. And we are the antidote. Sven, you had something to say?
Yeah, I think you're right there with the mother wears the trousers. I mean, matriarchies always devolve into fertility rites and orgies, and you see that with goddess worship. And what you've got there is a microcosm of what's going on around us. And, you know, everything's been devolved down into sex, and that's what she sees herself as. That's where her power lies, is just in the fact that she can take her clothes off. Not the fact that she can be a mother, she can bring children up, she can bring up the next generation, she can be somebody to look up to. But no, she just wants to use that magnet that she has between her legs, and that's all that's important to her. And this is something I think that we see with matriarchy, we see it with feminism. If you have a patriarchy, you wouldn't have anything like this, because women were seen as, you know, almost like property, and that there's one man, one wife, and women are there to raise up the next generation. And they're almost put up on a pedestal because of that. And they belong to one man. And, you know, patriarchy is so different to matriarchy and male to female. And if you have a female system with unbridled passions, women don't have any boundaries apart from the boundaries that men put there. So if you take all those boundaries away, that's where it ends up. And this is just a microcosm of what we see in society, with all the degeneration in society. And I do think it's because of this society has become so feminized, and we see this throughout history when this sort of thing happens. Just a point to make.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm just going to add one more thing before I go to this. We used to praise people for struggling to get to the top, for taking the hard route, because the hard route was harder, but it led to greater rewards, and it led to a happier place in the end. Now we praise people for taking the easy route. And the easy route for a young woman is, of course, to take her clothes off and charge money to men who want to see her naked or in various states of undress. That is the easy route. That's not the hard route. So we used to scorn that. We used to say that was the easy way out. It was taking the immoral and easy route. And we used to praise the girl who, rather than going for the quick, hard cash early on and showing her body off when she was young and attractive, she instead either went to school or got married or went to college and got a degree, or she did something to better herself. And that route doesn't bring you immediate wealth. It doesn't make you some rich OnlyFans model by the time you're 25. But what it does do is build a genuinely stable base for the rest of your lives. And the problem with these young girls who do these debased things and go for the quick, easy cash, the quick, easy cash will dry up at some point and they'll be left on the scrap heap. And I'll tell you what will happen to a lot of these girls. When they're 19, 20, 21, and they are the top they'll ever look, they're in peak condition, they're the best they're ever going to be, they might be making good money. But by the time they're 25, 26, 27, there'll be a new crop of 19, 20, 21-year-olds. And those 19, 20, 21-year-olds will be much more attractive. They'll have firmer bodies, fresher faces, and they'll be making all the money. And these girls who were once making all the money, unless they put that money to one side, which most won't, most will spend it on fast cars, renting inner city apartments, buying Gucci handbags, buying designer heels and designer clothes. And they'll hit their mid to late 20s. Most of that sweet, sweet early 20s money will have gone. And they'll find themselves having to do more and more debased things to earn the money and make the money they used to. And it won't just be taking their bra and knickers off on OnlyFans. It'll be doing things which are far, far less rewarding and far more debased. And this is how these young girls end up walking the path to hell. And what seems like the easy road ends up being the road to their own destruction. So we have some more super chats. Who have we got? Flying Dutchman gave $10. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, is saying Black Lives Matter violating the Incitement to Racial Discrimination statute? The Public Order Act of 1986 was passed to suppress discussion of racial issues in the UK. 25 years later, here we are. I completely agree with everything you said, Flying Dutchman. And the way that the Racial Discrimination Act is used is basically always against white people. For a non-white to fall foul of the race laws in the UK, they have to be also breaking existing incitement laws. And even then, often they don't go to prison. There was a case of a fat Muslim man who walked up to a white woman, pushed the white woman out of the way, I believe, and then spat in her baby's face and shouted at them, white women shouldn't breed. So this was assault. It was racially aggravated assault. And he was just let walk free from court. So there is basically already a dual legal system here in the UK, a two-track legal system. If you're non-white, you can more or less say what you want about white people. So if Sven had gone on his show and said that all of a particular racial group were evil or were devils and needed to pay reparations to another racial group for the crime, to whites, for the crime they'd committed against them, Sven would undoubtedly be found guilty. But blacks, Jews, or any other racial group can say that white people are devils and demand reparations from them and claim that whites are in some way responsible for all the ills of the world, and you would never, ever get a conviction against them. So that is how the race laws are used to silence white people and white people alone. Archie gave $3. Thank you so much, my friend. He says, perhaps Sven can collect remarks from high-profile grifters like Ash Sarkar to use as arguments in court. Thank you. Laura Towler gave £10. Thank you so much. And said, Sven is a lovely bloke. I've met him a few times and he helped me set up the Grandma Towler's website. PA and our community do everything we can to help him. We certainly will. And Sam gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, from one tie-wearing streamer to another, Jason, nice tie. Thank you, Sam. Flying Dutchman gave $10. Thank you so much. And said, whatever the agenda is, the government will attempt to pervert the law further to its agenda. COVID has turbocharged this. Indeed, it has. Thank you so much. Flying Dutchman gave $3. And says, does Trish 65535 know Jenny 867539? Tommy Two Tone is asking. Thank you so much. Yiz the Eunuch said, gave $3. Thank you so much. And said, I'll have you know, saying y'all isn't just for low IQ gibs and social media pretenders. Many educated, erudite Southerners, such as myself, make regular use of Southern contraction, y'all. Ooh, and Trish65535 also gave $10 and said, and y'all might reconsider your characterization of people who use the expression y'all on the regular, such as most Southerners in the US. You see, I didn't know that. My apologies to Southerners. When I hear people say y'all, I always expect it to be an overweight woman of African descent wagging her finger on some talk show like a Jerry Springer, but I am wrong. Is this a thing, Jason? Have I finally been caught out here? Have I made a grave error?
Yes, and you're not to be blamed. I mean, it's all the way across the pond. We Southerners proudly use the contraction y'all from you all. And when it's used outside of the South or outside of the Southern dialect, then it's true that it is usually used incorrectly, and it is usually used by low-class people. So you probably have seen that and then come to that conclusion.
Well, my apologies to all good Southerners who use the term y'all, and that must just be a British thing, that here in the UK, when it is said, it is generally said by certain groups of people, and it's not really a term that most well-spoken white people would use in the UK. So my apologies. Old Mother Earth gave $3 US. Thank you so much, and said, how can this woman think it's fine to do this stripping when at the same time she is probably standing up for equal rights, when in fact she is encouraging sex acts against women and abusing men? Well, there are all these contradictions, and these contradictions are all very, very interesting. Women call for, it's strange, isn't it? I'll give you an example. So Mrs. Mark is effectively a housewife. She's a full-time mum and homemaker. Now, women who are feminists would describe Mrs. Mark as an oppressed woman. They would describe her as a slave, as somebody who lives an unhappy life. They would cast many aspersions against all housewives and mothers. But it's amazing, isn't it, how they claim that a woman who chooses to stay at home, loves her partner or husband, brings up a child, and wishes to do wholesome acts, is oppressed and is living some kind of nightmare life, whereas some woman who goes to some seedy club, gets naked, dances on a stage, and has men push dollar bills into her thong, she is in fact free. She's liberated. She's living the dream. And again, this dovetails with what we were saying earlier, that famous quote by that particular American scholar, that what we have done is inverted our morality. We have placed things on a pedestal that are absolutely hideous, and at the same time we have taken things off the pedestal which should have been enshrined and should have been looked up to, and we have smashed them onto the floor and ground them into the dirt. So now the housewife is looked down on and the sex worker is applauded. And the amazing thing about this is, in our moral society, the sex worker was seen as degenerate, seen as amoral, but I don't think even in a moral society, a sex worker was publicly trashed as much as housewives are by the mainstream today. Even in a Christian moral society, the church and the state did not attack prostitutes in the same way that the mainstream media today in a liberal society attacks the housewife. Jason, Sven, do you want to make any points on that, that super chat?
Sven?
Yeah, I mean, I'm here. Yeah, you're quite right there. They've never used to condemn prostitutes. They used to go out and help them, I think. The church used to 100 years ago, 150 years ago, fallen women and homes for fallen women. But the way that mothers are demeaned today is disgusting, really, because it's such an important role, bringing up the next generation. They're encouraged to go out to work so that somebody else brings up the children. somebody who may not even be related to them. And for what? So that a mother can go out and they can earn money from their boss instead of reaping the love from their children and serving their husband when he comes home from work. And all it's done by bringing women into the workforce is halve the wages. A man used to be able to earn enough wages to pay for his wife and for four children. And now the two of them have to go out to work. The children are neglected of having their mother there all the time. It's it constantly we're being offered things like incentives to do things that are harmful to us as a nation. We're offered incentives as individuals and we take those incentives, but the actual aggregate effect is that it's harmful to the nation.
Yeah, great point. In all the literature that I've read over the years, fiction and nonfiction, set in earlier periods, and where they spoke about prostitution, rarely did I see them speak about prostitution, the authors, with this same enmity, the same disgust and contempt that they do with the modern. We should come up with another housewife. We should come up with another term, because there's so many things that go into being a mother at home and taking care of the home, taking care of the family. It is an unbelievably important job. And the reason, of course, that we see this enmity and this contempt and the disgust is because they want to de-incentivize our white women from being home, being partners with our white men, because they know that strong couples make strong families, and strong families make strong communities, and strong communities make strong peoples. And they simply, the anti-whites, they simply cannot allow that for us.
Thank you very much. Yiz the Eunuch gave another $3. Thank you so much. And said, the people like what you described using the term y'all culturally appropriated us from us lovely Southerners. Thank you so much. And Trish 65535 gave $10. Thank you for your generosity tonight, Trish. Said, remember that progressives think it's fine for boys as young as 9 and 10 to dress in drag and mime strip shows for dollar bills in adult clubs in the United States. That is a very sobering point. And Yiz the Eunuch gave another $3. Thank you so much. And said, the word is homemaker. A man makes a house, then the woman makes it a home. We call it a housewife here in the UK. But yes, homemaker is also a very good term, although slightly more American. Hail the New Dawn asked, have you seen the latest photos Red Flare have put out from the camp of you and Laura? Do we have any idea who's behind Red Flare? Could it be the state, Soros? Most likely, at the end of the day, left-wing groups trying to take pictures of nationalists is nothing new. Flying Dutchman gave another $3. Thank you so much. And said, PA should do a film review of Gone with the Wind. Scarlett O'Hara, after watching the film, Mark will shout, I'll save you, my dear, from them leftist hordes. Thank you so much. We do have a film review coming up, and it's going to be a Clint Eastwood film. People are voting on it at the moment. It's either going to be The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, or Gran Torino. Kelt asked a question for Sven and said, Sven, Radio Albion is absolutely brilliant. How can we best let people know about it and increase your audience? And also, the next question is, and also, can you repeat the email afterwards? Because people are asking for your email.
Well, that's a good point, because we don't actually use social media. I mean, people find out about Radio Albion by word of mouth. I mean, they used to find out about it at conferences or from people leaving comments. I mean, we say don't advertise it to people that aren't nationalists. But if you're commenting on a nationalist video or on a nationalist blog, then please do drop a radioalbion.com link there, and anybody that you think would be interested in the sort of comment in the sort of content that we talk about, let them know about us. Anybody that's interested in history, alternative views of history, World War II history, British history, pre-Roman history, racial history, patriotic history, anybody who's interested in those sorts of subjects is going to find Radio Albion a really interesting website. We've got audio books there as well. We've got all sorts of different series on there. So just drop comments in and leave a link to radioalbion.com. I think it's quite safe to add links on Gab, because Gab is mainly populated by alternative types anyway. I don't want it to seem as if we're sort of deliberately showing our content to people that might be a little bit sensitive, if you see what I mean. That's why I don't advertise on Facebook or Twitter, so we can't be accused of being shock jocks and trying to shock people. We're just trying to talk to our own people in a sensible, common sense way about the issues that are of interest to us, and to give people a shared sense of identity and a shared sense of our history, and also to teach people about the sort of subjects in history that they weren't taught about in school. So that's how you can help to spread the word of Radio Albion. And if you want to write in and let me know why you listen to us, the email address to send that to is stormersubs@hushmail.com.
Well, thank you so much for that, Sven. And people do get in touch with Sven. If you can help him out in any way, whether it be financially or whether it be by sending him testimonials or giving him advice, whatever it is, I'm sure it will be gratefully appreciated. He certainly deserves it with all of the work that he is doing at the moment and what he is going through. And I was there when he got raided. I was in touch with him on a daily basis. I was shocked with what they did. And I was also shocked with what they took from him, because what they took from Sven wasn't just what you would think they would take, but they took things such as microphones, amps, other equipment, just to make Sven's life difficult. And we did make sure that all of those things were replaced for him as quickly as possible. As far as I am concerned, the British police are a complete and utter disgrace, and their behaviour with this particular case and treatment of Sven is absolutely shocking. The way they raided him, the things they took so long to do anything about it. They kept him in limbo. They kept his computer, refused to give it back. I mean, these computers, they could literally just take the hard drive out of them or copy the hard drive and give them back. But they have tried to make this guy's life as difficult as possible. And Sven relies on Radio Albion. He runs it as a full-time endeavor. These people are not simply trying to enforce the law. They are trying to ruin people's lives. Because if you take somebody's computer away, if you take away their microphones, if you take away all the tools of their trade, and you hold them at some police station for over 12 months, what is going to reasonably happen to that person? Well, you're going to stop them doing business. You're going to stop them making money. This is not justice. This is not a system of bringing the bad guys to book. This is a system that was designed to clamp down on freedom of speech. It was a system that has been carefully constructed so that the police and the government can bully innocent people and basically stifle any form of opposition that grows from the indigenous people in basically a way where the indigenous people are going to fight back against their demographic replacement. And these race laws were worded in such a way that they can be liberally applied to any speech to effectively criminalize people who in court can prove it was absolutely not their intention to stir up any form of hatred, which leaves us in a position where we as nationalists are living under what has to be seen as a complete and utter tyranny. But this affects Sven at the moment far more than it affects anyone else, because he has been charged. He will be on trial. So Sven, do you want to, before we end the show for the night, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left. So do you want to give a final summation on this before we say our goodnights?
Yeah, I mean, what they actually took, I think they took 3 or 4 computers off me. And when you mentioned there about taking away the tools of somebody's trade, I mean, that used to be against the law. Our old laws that we had when Alfred the Great actually compiled his law code. From before that, we had a selection of laws that were called the triads, and one of those laws were that you couldn't take the tools of a man's trade away from him, because that would be to unman a man. And they did. They took all my tools of trade away from me, and I had to replace all of them at my own expense. And obviously, you helped me out with that straight away, because I didn't even have a computer that I could order a new microphone or order a new computer on. Mark had to do that for me, and I had to do all of this without telling people about it as well. I mean, I was furious, and yet I was still making the podcast every day and still putting on that cheery face for the listeners, not wanting to bother them with the troubles that that I was going through. And now it's all come out, and everybody understands what is happening. And I just want people to know that, you know, I do just see this as another challenge to rise to. And we need challenges to rise to, and we overcome them. And when we overcome them, we become better people. And once this is overcome, it will make things better for everyone. So, you know, don't pray for me, and don't lose faith. And you know, I will beat this. I'm certain that we will be able to beat it together, especially with your help. If you're a Radio Albion listener and you can write to me and, you know, just tell me why it is that you listen, and what role does Radio Albion play in your life, and that is the best way that that you can help me. So thank you very much anyway, Mark, for inviting me on today to discuss all of this. And I know people have been people didn't really know what was going on, and I couldn't really tell people what was going on until I knew, you know, whether I was going to be charged or whether I was just going to get all my equipment back and they would forget about it. But if you want to do your wrap up, Mark, I'll find your numbers for you while you're doing that.
Well, it has been a good show tonight, and I'm very sorry for what Sven's going through, and I'm pleased this has been made public. And since it has been made public, we wanted him on here as a guest as soon as possible to explain it to you, because there are disingenuous people who call themselves nationalists who have tried to paint this as some kind of sting against PA. This is nothing of the sort. And we are legally allowed to talk about the arrest. We are legally allowed to talk about the questioning. Obviously, when this goes to trial, there will be reporting restrictions on certain things said in the court, and at that point, we will no longer be able to discuss it. But we are legally allowed to say what we want about this at the moment, because Sven is currently not on trial. He will be on trial at a later date, but what happens in a case like this is you immediately go to the magistrates. You plead guilty or not guilty. Once you have entered your plea, you then report to the magistrate again at a later date, and the magistrate decides whether the case is going to be held in the magistrate's court or in the Crown Court. Now, for a case like this, I expect it will be in the Crown Court, and then a date will be set. Now, the first date when you're in Crown Court, you do not actually go straight into the cross-examination or the actual trial. Usually legal arguments are made, a formal date is set, a length of the trial or proposed length of the trial is set. So these are quite lengthy proceedings. This isn't just going to the magistrate's court because you were drunk and disorderly on a Friday night and they give you a £50 fine and then it's all forgotten about 2 days later. This will be a long drawn out affair. And until the trial is properly underway and Sven is in the dock, we can discuss this, and we can certainly discuss the things we have done tonight. So anyone disingenuously saying that we have somehow broken the law or done something untoward, we certainly haven't. I know what you can and can't say in court trials, because I've been there, and I spent from 2004 when I was initially arrested? Yes, 2004 when I was initially arrested to 2007 when I was found unanimously not guilty in a trial like this. So I know exactly what the do's and don'ts are. Now, we have some numbers from Sven tonight. In total, we have had 1,660 people watching on Radio Albion, and we had about 650 people watching in total here. We had 200 on Odyssey, about 430 on DLive, and about 42, well, we have got 42 over on Entropy. So about 2,300 people tuning in tonight. So thank you to everyone who did tune in this evening. Now, I'm going to pass it over to No White Guilt so he can say his good nights for the evening, and then we'll wrap things up.
A great good night to everyone out there, and best of luck to Sven. Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the great Jared George and myself with the great Semiagog. Don't miss it. It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. It's been wonderful appearing with Sven and Mark, our leader here on PWR again, and all of you watching, our extended family around the world. Thank you so much, and I'll pass it back.
Well, thank you so much to Jason. Thank you so much to Sven. If you can get in touch with Sven through radioalbion.com or through his email, which he's read out numerous times, say the radioalbion.com link will be in the description for those watching it on BitChute or Odyssey Replay. It's in the Odyssey description of the show now, so people can go over to Radio Albion and go to the contact pages and get in touch with him. Please do that. Please offer Sven any support that you can. We have been live on Odyssey. We've been live on DLive, RadioAlbion.com, and Wake Up UK. It's been a fantastic show tonight. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to Sven. Thank you to everybody who donated so generously. I will be back on Friday with my weekly video. I will also be back on Sunday with Ethan Ralph for a bit of Warzone with the Patreon, and hopefully Andy Worski too. And I would like to say a special thank you to this wonderful community. It's times like this when community really counts. So if everyone can pull together, that would be greatly appreciated. I hope you've had a good evening. Stay strong, keep fighting. I'll see you all again soon. Love you lots, guys. Have a great evening.